Blog Talk Radio.
Run to Old Navy to save up to 50% off summer's most stylish dresses, shirts, and shorts for the family. But you better hurry. At up to 50% off, your favorite styles are going fast. And you should too. Run to Old Navy now. Valid 7/5 to 7/13. Select styles only.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Horoscope Detective Show. This is your host, Issachar Bey. I want to thank all of you guys for tuning in. We have another great show today for you guys. Those of you that are listening at any time, please feel free to type your questions and comments in the chat room, or you could call in at 718-664-9735. And once you call in, you will press the number 1, and this will indicate to us that you have a call or a comment that you wish to display. Today we have a very, very special guest, somebody who I've very, very been patiently anticipating to talk to. She is author, astrologer, teacher, lecturer, and somebody who's very, very fundamental in a lot of the organizations in the astrological community. And so we were definitely honored to have her today. I want to welcome to the show Chris McRae. Hello, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just great, Issachar. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I want to thank you for definitely being on the show. And just for our listeners, those that don't know anything about you, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in astrology?
And how I think I just, I'm not too sure I heard that. Did you want me to talk about how I got involved in astrology?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, even as a little girl, I used to look fondly up at the sky and be enchanted by the patterns that I saw in the night sky. But, of course, I had to grow up, and I had to learn to read. And then I started life. You know how we all do. We get out of school. We start a career. We fall in love. We have a family. We are involved in a mortgage, all that sort of good stuff. And all the while, astrology was in the back of my mind, wondering how I could learn about it, where I could get information. And I just kept longing for it and longing for it. And you know, you've probably, Issachar, heard that expression of when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. And then one day I found my first book. Actually, I stumbled upon the American Federation of Astrologers, which is an organization in Arizona. And I discovered that they had a whole warehouse worth of books. So I started ordering them, I guess, almost by the truckload, devouring them and studying them. It just became so fascinating to me. And it was just a sort of a part-time something that I enjoyed doing that I sort of jammed into other parts of my life. And I had a career in broadcasting, as a matter of fact. And it was a very enjoyable career, a very fruitful career. And as all things, after many, many years, the broadcast industry started shifting and changing. And I thought, you know, I don't think I want to do this anymore. And I thought, wonder what I should do. And then before I realized it, I realized I had a full-time career already developed. And that's when I became a professional astrologer. That was probably about the late 1960s. I started teaching my first classes and seeing my first clients, as a matter of fact, in 1970. So that's my story, Issachar.
And, you know, being that, you know, most of us have had that excitement when we first get involved in astrology, and you realize that astrology is a little bit more than just, you know, just about, you know, horoscope signs or reading your horoscope in the paper, that it's actually more involved, more in depth, and that there's so much more that's involved in that. I see here we have a couple of callers who want to make a comment. Let's bring them in. Area code 805.
Oh, hi. How are you? My name's Donna. Oh, I didn't know if you were going to give little astrology readings or anything like that. I wasn't familiar.
No, I don't know. I think I'm supposed to answer that. No, Donna, That wasn't planned on the program.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll continue to listen, but thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling in.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go to area code 978.
Yes, hi. I just tuned in. Are you doing astrology chart readings?
No, we're not. That wasn't on our planned schedule. Sorry.
I don't know. Is that what the other woman asked? Because the way it looks on the... Is this for psychic questions?
Issachar, are you going to answer that for?
Yeah, well, basically, for the show, we have Chris McGray on. We're going to be asking her questions. This is more of an interview-type setting today. We're not going to really be doing astrology readings. So those of you who are listening, we wanted to kind of get her on the show and find out a lot of things that she's done and been fundamental in starting. So if you guys have any questions or comments for her, regarding astrology, regarding, you know, anything, that's pretty good. But we're not going to be doing personal readings today, so those of you that are listening. Chris, I wanted to ask you about, I'm a Uranian astrologer. I've studied under Arlene Kramer, and also I've studied, you know, in CGR. I'm from New York City, so with the Michael Lutons and the John Malkicellas and, you know, been involved in just that circle. Moving to Las Vegas, and then I got introduced to Bob Mulligan. And he actually was the one that got me to buy this book entitled How to Start, Maintain, and Expand an Astrological Practice. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about the book and how it came together. And it's a great book for anybody who's thinking about becoming a professional astrologer or anybody who's just thinking about looking at it from a business aspect. But I want your intake on how did the book come together and the whole fundamentals of it.
Yes. Well, I'd love to talk about that, but you did mention Bob Mulligan. And, of course, I know Bob very, very well. And I was at that very, very, very first meeting of the organization, OPA. It wasn't called OPA then, Organization of Professional Astrologers. And what we had been doing at that time, doing our conferences were just astrologers, experienced astrologers, professional astrologers like myself, who had been working in the field for some time, and we would do lectures and talks on how to have a successful astrological practice. So one day, Bob got the brainstorm that all of this should be put in a book. So that's how to start, maintain, and expand an astrological practice came into being. Now, this is a book that has chapters by 12 different professional astrologers, and each of these astrologers offer their advice on various facets about their own particular astrological practice, of course, based upon their many years' experience. I myself did a chapter on advice on planning time and space, and that's a very, very important part if we're going to be an entrepreneur, which, of course, being a professional astrologer is. We work for ourselves. We have to know how to work for ourselves. We have to have a certain routine. We have to follow that routine on a day-by-day basis. But first of all, in order to have a successful practice, we have to figure out how much money we need every month to live on, how much for instance, our car payments, our groceries, our mortgage, our day-to-day expenses. And then we have to figure out, well, how much am I going to charge my clients if I'm going to do charge for people? And then, how many clients would I need to have in order to meet my expenses? So you see, there is a lot to learning how to work for oneself, or in this case, learning how to be a professional astrologer. And that, Issachar, is what this book is all about. And it isn't just, of course, that one chapter. Let me think of some of the people that wrote pieces and parts in there. Rick Levine, he talked about research and how to grow a business. Who else was Georgia Stravis talked about marketing and building a practice. Somebody else talked about just the nuts and bolts of a practice or the nuts and bolts of public speaking. Michael Mancasey did financial planning. Oh, yes, and Ray Merriman, who's a very well-known financial astrologer, he had a chapter in there, too. David Cochran, Joanne Wickenberg. For anybody who's been in astrology for any length of time, those are very familiar names. And so that's what the book is. I think it's an extremely valuable book for anybody that is either in practice already or planning on getting into a practice. And you said you read it and you found it very helpful, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that it was definitely a great idea to put together. Everybody who's interested in getting into the business or just getting a deeper understanding of just that side of it, I thought it was definitely exceptional. I found that it was definitely something that increased my knowledge and awareness about the business side of it. Anybody who's listening, who's thinking about becoming an astrologer or who's thinking about getting into the business side of it, definitely take a look at it. Now, you did mention that you were at the first meeting when you guys began Oprah, and I wanted you to just, if you could, just talk a little bit about Oprah and how it started and just where you've seen it grow from where it started now and some of the great benefits of being a part of Oprah that you've seen over the years.
Yes, that very first day when we all met, it was a room full of those of us who felt, oh, finally, somebody is going to start an astrological organization for professional astrologers. Now, it wasn't just, as it turned out, it wasn't just for a professional astrologers, but it became extended for anybody who was interested in becoming a professional astrologer or wanted to know what would be involved or how you would go about being a professional astrologer. And it started out at first with a one-day conference that was attached onto an NCGR conference. That's the National Council of Geocosmic Research. And then one day we realized that we had become large enough to be able to branch off on our own and not be a special interest group attached to another conference. So that's when OPA was born, the OPA Organization for Professional Astrologers. I believe that was 1970. Are you familiar with that date? I hope I'm correct on that.
Yeah.
I think it was. And the whole idea, of course, is for the development and support of professional astrologers also for those who want to be. The annual conferences have now become retreats. They are a wonderful experience. We have one of these every year, and the one coming up will be March the 20th to the 23rd, and it will be in Myrtle Beach in South Carolina. I think one of the great things about these retreats are that there's a large group experience where one can listen to different topics by various experienced astrologers, people in various fields. And then we break off into small groups, and these small groups are about 8 small study groups, and each one is led by an experienced group leader. And there are, for this one, this month, as a matter of fact, there will be 14 tracks to choose from. My particular track is going to be on horary astrology. That is the art of choosing, of setting a chart for a very, very important question that needs an immediate answer. Last year, I did the techniques on chart reading. So there are so many different topics that are being presented that anybody who would like to participate in this particular retreat has a large variety of tracks to choose from. And I would suggest if anybody is listening who would like to attend that retreat that you simply go on the OPA website. And what is it, OPA Astrology? Well, I would suggest putting Organization of Professional Astrologers into your search engine and OPA will come up. So anyway, that's what this conference or this retreat is going to be all about.
Okay. I did notice, you know, looking at your website, that you received the Paul R. Grell Award. Could you tell us a little bit about that award and how, you know, what was the significance of receiving an award of your recognition?
Oh, that really came as a surprise. We were at a conference. It was an AFA conference, American Federation of Astrologers, a name I had previously mentioned. And they give out an award periodically for the best book written within a certain period of time. And the book I had written was called, was on understanding interceptions. Interceptions happens to be part of the geometric process that a chart is set up by. And so I was very pleased to and very surprised to get such an award. So that's what that was all about.
Now, I know also not only with OPA, but also with ISAR, you have a lot of accolades and also are a part of ISAR, too. What is your function with ISAR? And tell us a little bit about the organization for those who don't know about it.
Well, I'm also very, very proud of the work that we've been doing with ISAR, the International Society of Astrological Research. These are the two organizations that I do support with a great deal of energy and effort, the OPA that we've just been talking about. I had previously done a lot of work with the American Federation of Astrologers, but about the year 2000, I joined ISAR, and Ray Merriman had phoned me up one day, and Ray had asked me if I would like to join the board of ISAR. Now, Ray Merriman is a financial astrologer. Ray had a vision at that time, and his vision had to do with trying to find a way of upgrading the concept of astrology, the professionalism of astrology. And he knew that I was very, very interested in this idea, too. So anyway, Ray had the vision, and I was very interested in helping that, to develop that. So I ended up chairing several of the committees that developed that program. I shortly thereafter also became vice president of ISAR, and because I helped I chaired the many different committees that created this program. When the program was finally launched in Chicago in 2005, I ended up being chair of that particular committee. On behalf of a lot of the work that ISAR does, plus this particular certification program that we developed, started getting the attention of many other organizations around the world. And to this date, it has actually gone global, and it has been translated into many, many different countries. And for this reason, also, I became chair of the International Council of ISAR vice presidents. So, yes, I've been very, very active with ISAR. And I believe the whole idea is, if we are enjoying the profession that we belong to, and that profession has been good to us, I think that it's important that we turn a certain amount of our own energy and our own resources and our own abilities towards supporting the organization and supporting our profession for other people that are also part of the profession or that are coming up behind us. The people that are learning our profession, or the young people, the wonderful parade of young people that are coming into astrology. So I believe in giving back to our profession, and that's the way I've done it. I've done it through both OPA as well as ISAR. So that gives you kind of a thumbnail sketch of what ISAR is. Would it be of interest if I outline maybe a half a dozen of the different things that ISAR offers? Would that be something you think our listeners would like to hear about, Issachar?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay, well, let's start out by saying that ISAR connects a member with one of the largest international network of astrologers through weekly newsletters, webinars, conferences, and, of course, even through Facebook. There's a journal that's printed three times a year that's full of astrological articles, the latest research and study reports, and it provides members with a searchable archive of past journals and articles. And, of course, I mentioned the certification program that offers members the opportunity to become certified. And as I've also mentioned, that has become globally accepted as a program of achievement that is now being translated into quite a number of different languages, Turkish, Russian, Hebrew, Chinese. We were in China just a couple of months ago, introducing the program there as well. ESAR supports research with grants. There are various study groups, special interest study groups, such as financial, spiritual, mundane, esoteric. Oh, my goodness, there's also a discounted library card to the Marion March Research Library. And, of course, we have conferences, usually biannual conferences. We have one coming up this year in 2014. It will be September the 25th to the 28th. We have 75 world-class presenters that are coming from 20 different countries. So that should be quite a celebration of astrology. ESAR also supports students with scholarships to attend conferences. And we have also an affiliated school program with designated curriculums that equal the ESAR educational requirements for certification. So those are some of the main advantages of becoming an ESAR member. Anybody that's interested in more about the conference or more about our programs, the website is esarastrology.com. ESAR is ISAR. Okay, so that's basically the program. Would you like maybe a few thoughts about the certification program itself, do you think, maybe?
Yeah, because, I there's different organizations out there, but I found that, even from the people that I know who are part of the ESAR, that their certification program is definitely top-notch. Definitely a very, very good one. So, yeah, you could definitely elaborate a little bit about the certification program.
Yes. Well, first of all, we did start by outlining a body of knowledge for study and learning that we felt would constitute the necessities of learning. And that was one of the committees that I chaired. And what I did for that one, I collected the very prominent and significant teacher of four different countries and to collaborate so that we could lay out a program. It wasn't just something that came from one or two people. It came from four different learned schools around the world. And so once we had developed that, then we were able to, we had a framework, something to work with. Then, in the meantime, also an ethics document was being created. The ethics document is quite a formidable document, and there is a program and a test that one would take that can be attained from the ESAR website or could be taken personally from a classroom setting at a conference. So that was being developed and worked on. Dr. Glenn Perry did a great deal of work on that program and laid out the basic premise of it. It has, of course, been amended and changed in different ways since then. Then a group of people had developed a 20-hour consulting skills program, and today it is conducted by well-trained trainers that present the program, usually at an astrological conference. And as you heard me say a few moments ago, that some of us have also been trained on the international front understanding what it's like working with different cultures. And the program has been introduced into, as I say, other countries. And then finally, to complete the certification, there's a six-hour competency exam that does, I think, a pretty thorough job of testing one's general knowledge as well, of course, as the interpretive skills. So that's basically what the program is. And we feel that by stepping forward with such a program that we are helping to upgrade the professional status of astrology. If we are going to wait to be accepted by the public or to be accepted by academia, we're going to wait a very long time. And we felt that we had to do something about doing this ourselves. What can we do to upgrade our own standards, to help the public to understand that there are standards to being a well-qualified professional astrologer? So, you know, there are other very good certification programs as well. We happen to be extremely proud of the one that we have done. So anyway, yes, NCGR has a certification program. OPA has a certification program. And also the AFA, American Federation of Astrologers. But we feel that we have a pretty well-rounded program. So anyway, that explains that, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Those of you who are listening in, if you're just tuning in, we have a special guest with us, astrologer, author, Chris McRae, and she is definitely somebody who's very, very well knowledge, well-versed, and also very foundational in a lot of the programs that have been created in the astrological community. So it's definitely an honor to have her on the show today. And she's given us so much valid information thus far about just the different organizations. And those of you that are listening, definitely if you're not a part of ESA, or, you know, you're just starting out and you want to learn about astrology, I would definitely recommend, I would behoove you to get involved with ESA to, you know, definitely get involved. They have so many different networks and forums and groups and just different things that you can become a part of. So it's definitely something that I would recommend those of you, if you're interested in that, to get involved in it. I wanted to talk about your organization, the EAF, out of Canada that you have going on out there. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how was it started and what is it all about?
Well, it's a local organization of astrologers. Actually, I started teaching astrology here in my own city in 1970, and as two or three or four years started passing by, the different students would say to me, why don't you start an organization where, you know, we can continue to grow with our astrology beyond the classes? And I kept saying, well, why do I have to do it? Why doesn't somebody else do it? And then finally one day, since nobody else was doing it, it befell me to do it, so that's what I did. That organization is now in, I believe it's the 36th year of existence. So we've just, I don't know, we just do our own research. We present our own programs on a monthly basis. We meet once a month. And once or twice a year, we bring in speakers from out of the country. It just somehow thrives and carries on over all of these many years, and is still going strong. So some of our members have been with us. They were founding members back in that stormy winter day in December when we started it. So we're very proud of the fact that it has lasted for so long, because sometimes these organizations come and go, don't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. With your knowledge and vast, you know, just being involved in astrology for so long, and you've seen it expand to the depth and to the plateau that it's at now, what do you feel about just seeing how it's expanding globally, all over the world, even in some of your travels outside of the country, just seeing that how it has expanded. The level of even the certification programs just the level of those people who are real serious about it, and how it's being globally accepted now as opposed to before?
Well, that's a very, very interesting question, and I think about that a lot because I get asked that quite a lot. I have noticed a great deal of difference in astrology since I started so many years ago. First of all, the students that were attracted to come into astrology mostly were older people. Maybe they had finished raising their family, and they were looking for something kind of interesting to do. And, you know, they had lost track of any professional activity because they'd been home raising a family. In other words, I'm talking about a lot of women would be coming into these classes. And that was all wonderful, you know, and many went on to further studies, and some just did it as an interest and dropped off and maybe would come to see this astrologer once in a while for an upgrade on what's going on in their life. But over the years, I think probably one of the greatest advantages and boon to astrology was the advent of computers, because all of these computations that we do to erect a chart, we did it all by hand. And that took a lot more time to do a chart than today, when we just punch into a computer, birth data, and out pops the chart and any other additional information that we want in connection with that chart. So we have been able to go through a lot more charts in a shorter space of time. And because of that, too, and also because of the fact that we were doing more work, we began to have conferences, more conferences, different conferences, where we would be exchanging data and ideas and information. So you can see how this would grow, just like a mushroom popping out of the ground. And then we had a great deal of different types of people with different types of academic backgrounds coming into astrology, notably the psychologists. Many of these people started gravitating into astrology, first of all, perhaps as an adjunct to their work, but quite a number of psychologists who got into astrology began to become professional astrologers, using their psychology to help their astrology rather than the other way around. So astrology began to change. It became less and less a predictive tool and more a self-awareness tool, something that would help us to understand better our own dynamics or to understand what we were working with at any given time in our life, why sometimes things would get a little complicated in our life, and the insight that we could get to help us understand where we were and what we were doing and what we were learning and what we were going through. So that's basically the change that I have seen. And plus the fact that because we have computers and we have so many adventuresome minds and creative people that have moved into astrology, astrology itself has been advancing. And you know something, Issachar, the greatest, I think one of the most exciting things that I think that is happening in astrology right now, even as we are talking, more and more young people are coming into astrology. They're coming in to see an astrologer or coming in to study astrology. We have so many brilliant young people that are coming forward in astrology now that are coming through with their different age group because, and their minds are working at a different level or maybe even at a different speed than some of us, say, of my generation. So we've had that great advantage, too, of these young people coming in with their brilliance and their creativity. I've noticed something else. Many years ago, in the early days when I started, once in a while I would be invited over to the university to give a presentation at one of the faculties on astrology. And in those days, these students would look at me like there was something the matter with me. They would ask me questions that would put me on the hot seat, and they were quite negative in their approach and attitude. But in the last 3 or 4 years, I have been invited over quite a number of times to the university to do presentations, and these young students are eager, they're interested, they're excited that an astrologer is coming to talk to them. I do a power presentation for them to show them all of the different ramifications, the growth of astrology, what astrology can do, and so on. And they're full of questions. The questions now are, instead of attacking me, the questions now are quizzical. They're interested. They're excited. So I hope I have kind of shown a little bit of my own excitement here in how we have been growing, not only in what we do, but in how we approach ourselves professionally, that I hope I have been able to transmit some of that excitement and some of that growth in these few small words that I've given you. But most definitely it's changing. And the other part that is so interesting is that there are other countries that are wanting to amalgamate into, perhaps, maybe it would be fair to say, into a global thinking in astrology, that we're going to be, that we are beginning to amalgamate our thinking, our ideas. Of course, we are working with translators. There were some of us from ESAR who in August went to China, as I had briefly mentioned before, to introduce the certification program. And we met this group of absolutely wonderful, brilliant, thirsty young Chinese students who were thirsty for Western input into their thinking. And we had the feeling that there was a renaissance of astrology or a renaissance of thinking going on in China. And they are very anxious to integrate more with us. Some of them are, even now as we're talking, preparing to come to our ESAR conference in Arizona in September. And we had many of them. I think there were about 20 of them that we met in New Orleans last year at a UAC conference called United Astrological Conference. That was the World Astrology Conference, also the same as this ESAR one that we're doing. So, yes, that was. I'm so glad you asked that question. You can probably sense my enthusiasm and excitement about how we are evolving in astrology today.
Exactly. You know, those of you that are just tuning in, we have with us special guest astrologer, author, Chris McGray. She is one of the founding members of Organization of Professional Astrologers. She's on the board of ESAR. You know, those of you that are listening, she's just given us a wealth of information and knowledge. She's definitely very foundational in a lot of the things that have been set up in the astrological community, and she's just explaining to us about how far astrology has come from back then to where it is now. One of the reasons why I had you on the show today was over the last few months I've been really getting involved into looking at relocation astrology. And mm-hmm. I've been, you know, looking at it from different perspectives. I reached out to Dave Cochran, and he showed me about his treasure maps, and we've talked to different relocation experts, and it was my teacher, I call him the master astrologer, Quadet, who began to give me an article about geodetic, the geodetic map, and just the whole geodetic facade about relocation astrology and the geodetic angles and the different, just the whole layout of what it was all about. So I began to research and try to find out how could I get a copy of this geodetic map and how could I really get really get a keen insight on really what geodetics is all about. And so doing my research, I ran into you, and I came into you, and just so happens I received my book and my map yesterday. So those of you, you know, that are listening, by the time we finish this interview, you would understand what I mean. But I wanted to really expand on just how you know, because if you read the book, as I've already read it, you get into understanding how you came into setting up the geodetic map and really revising the book. that you received. But I wanted you to get into that and how fascinating it is to work with the geodetic map and some of your experience you had with your travels through clients and so forth.
Mm-hmm. When I first started doing it, I did not realize it was such a magnificent relocation concept. I'll tell you a little bit of my own history of how I got into it. As I had mentioned earlier, when my interest in astrology was finally becoming satisfied with all the books that I could order from the AFA, I noticed one little book titled called Geodetic Equivalents, and it was only about $1.50 at the time, and I thought, what the heck, I'll just put that into my order. Little did I know the little gem that I would be receiving. I'm holding that very book in my hand right now as I talk to you, and that little book, as I say little, it's 4.5 inches by 6 inches, and it's 1/8 of an inch thick. So it's a pretty tiny little book. It didn't have too much in it. But what it did is it talked about the geographic chart. It talked about a different way of setting up the astrological wheel from an Earth point of view, putting the zodiac across planet Earth, which I will explain more fully in a moment. So I get this little book, I read it very quickly, and then I realized that every time there's an important event in the news, I would run upstairs to my office, my study, and I would look up the geographic coordinates of latitude and longitude of that location. I would set up the geodetic wheel, and I would look at the progressions and transits that were running in that wheel. And I'd say, oh, my goodness, no wonder that event happened at that location. So I became fascinated with this. And then one day I realized that, I'd be doing this in such a hurry that these incidences were piling up on my desk and I wasn't getting enough of the charts done because, remember, we didn't have computers in those days. So I said to myself, I wonder if there's a way of putting these angles on a map. Because the geodetic wheel includes all of the house cusps. But when important events are happening, the angles, as we as astrologers know, the angles are the part of the chart that are being activated, probably most succinctly. So I thought there's got to be a way. So it would be easy enough to put all of the mid-heavens on a map. So I got out a big wall map, a Rand McNally wall map, and I followed the directions. No, there weren't any directions. I just went through my own mind and said, okay, the mid-heavens, the zodiac of 360 degrees is stretched eastward from Greenwich. 1 degree of geographic longitude represents 1 degree of the astrological zodiac. What I mean is, at London, you're going to have 0 degrees Aries on the mid-heaven. 15 degrees east longitude, geographically speaking, would be 15 degrees Aries. So let's go to 45 degrees east longitude, geographically speaking. That would be 15 degrees Taurus. Okay, so I drew these 30-degree astrological divisions across this map. That was easy. That was a no-brainer. But how do you put the ascendants on there? I thought about that for a little while. So then I took the table of houses. Old-time astrologers will understand this, but the younger astrologers who have not done the math would wonder what I'm talking about. But I went into the table of houses, and I started with 0 degrees Aries, and I took at 15 degrees of latitude, I looked at 0 degrees Aries, found the midheaven coordinate, mapped it on the map, put a little X on the map, as a matter of fact, and then I connected the lines. It took a little bit of ingenuity to do that, but once I figured out how to do it, it was very, very easy to do. Now, of course, we have computers. We can do geodetic maps or we can do geodetic wheels on any number of astrological programs today. As a matter of fact, the Kepler program created by David Cochrane has an excellent map program, a geodetic map program in it. So that is how it got started. And then I started lecturing about this at conferences, and I took this big map that I had drawn the angles on. I had been using it to study my own news items. So I would take this map to a conference, I would pin it up in front of the room, and I would show others on how you could read the geodetic map to follow mundane events or events going on around the world, whether it would be a volcanic eruption, an earthquake, a political activity, a mudslide, didn't matter what it was. It could be earmarked on the map. And then one day it occurred to me, oh, my goodness, this is also a relocation map. I could take certain planets from my client's charts that I wanted either to avoid or to make prominent and find that on the map and could be used as a relocation tool. So it's kind of hard to explain, Issachar, because it's such a visual thing, this map idea. But I'm hoping that I succeeded in some way to indicate that all I did simply was draw the midheaven, the MCIC, and the ascendant descendants on a map that one can insert planets from a natal chart to see where one is comfortable or not so comfortable, or one can follow events in the news. It's really kind of interesting right now following what's going on in the world with what's going on up in the sky simply by looking at the map. I don't know if you've had a chance to do that yet because you just got your map.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at Russia or the Ukraine yet with all the stuff that I'm hearing about. But we have a question here from a caller. I just want to bring him in. Area code 347.
Yes. Good afternoon. Chris?
Yes.
My name is Dave, and I am an astrologer here in New York. And having read the original book that you made reference to by Safariel, I was just wondering, in terms of the interpretive quality, how do you view the difference between the relocated chart with the relocated angles and the local meridian and local ascendant that is derived from a geodetic calculation in terms of the interpretation on the impact to the individual when in that location? How do you see the difference?
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Dave, I'm not quite understanding your question. It sounds like you're talking about the same thing.
Well, the relocation chart is done.
Oh, I get what you're saying. The relocation chart, as a matter of fact, is I think you mean the regular traditional relocation chart, right?
Of the relocation of the natal versus the inclusion
of the
angles, right?
I get it. Now, that natal chart can also be put on a map, and that's the astrocartography.
Right.
And so that is a different system. So the two systems, I believe, are actually quite viable, each one for their own specific reasons. Some people like the astrocartography, and some people like the geodetic. As a matter of fact, I did an article in a book on relocation that was, I'm just trying to reach it here as I'm reaching the phone. It's called From Here to There, and it was edited by Martin Davis. And I wrote an article in there comparing the ACG, or the natal chart relocation that you're talking about, with the geodetic. And I used one incident and showed how both of them could say the same thing, only in a slightly different way. Did that answer your question?
Partially. You know, that's like saying the different house systems can show the same thing from a different perspective. But I was speaking more from an absolute dynamic. What in terms of the impact on the individual, does the insertion, and I work on a Tao, I'm into the Iranian and cosmobiology approach. When I put the relocated angles on the 90-degree dial, leaving the rest of the chart intact, including the natal angles, and then when I take the whole chart and relocate it, very much similar to the Jim Lewis approach.
Which is the astrocartography.
That is correct. And then I'm finding that one seems to be, and I've done a little research on this, one seems to be that the relocation chart tends to put planets in a position where the energy that it represents in the individual is called to the fore and made prominent and necessary for the individual to manifest. Whereas when I do the geodetics, what I'm finding is that particular energy within the environment is something that the individual has to confront. Now, this isn't 20 years of research, but this is the kind of thing I'm leading to, and I was wondering if you were finding any similarities in your own research.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I don't work with a 90-degree dial. I certainly have used it in the past. I've just enough to know what it is. But I don't use it in my work. You know, we have, Dave, so many, many, many tools in our toolbox that we can't use all of them all of the time for everything, can we? So, so we determine which one of the tools of all of the ones that we're familiar with that give us the results that we're looking for. That is the best way that I can answer what you're talking about, because we have many different systems to do many, many things. And as I say, we can't do everything for all things.
Right.
So you would, because you work with different things like the dial, and so on, you may find certain things that are very viable for you to follow in your path and not necessarily other things. I remember one day I happened to be talking to Noel Till, who was moving down to Fountain Hills, Arizona, which is one of the Valley of the Sun areas of Scottsdale. And I said to him, oh, what made you leave the East and come down here to the desert? And he said, one of the things that helped me change my mind was the my chart and my geodetic for this area. So I thought, that's kind of cool. That was a pretty good endorsement, wasn't it?
I would say so, considering it was no fill.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's a very good question and very good thought, but it isn't something that I have spent any time working with. Once I got the geodetic understood in terms of relocation and for mundane work, it did not become my major center of focus for my work. You see, Dave, I see clients every day. I have an extremely busy practice. I'm very involved with ESAR, and I also lecture at conferences literally around the world, a lot in the U.S., I have one trip coming up this month for OPA. I have another one next month for the Great Lakes Conference in Detroit. So you see, my schedule is so full that it doesn't give me much time to work on some of those creative ideas.
I see. There's only one thing that troubles me. You didn't say New York.
Well, that is such a huge, big city, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Well,
no, you certainly sound like a New Yorker.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm from.
It's so nice to talk to you. Maybe we'll meet at one of these conferences. Come to the ESAR conference. It's going to be a fabulous conference in September in Arizona.
Oh, yes, that's what, right around the corner.
Yes, it is.
What do they say? Jump on JetBlue and you're there.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I'm pretty used to jumping on a plane and spending a long time on it before I get to death.